The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Danny Cannell, that's Bud Elliott, that's Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. We got Danny in Tallahassee in the Sidewinder, the Seminole Sidewinder, stunting on everybody. We'll get to that in just a little bit. We've got some Pac-12 quarterbacks that are on the move, and we want to take a look through the history of college football and try and identify some of the most important developments that have helped shape the sport. It could be things on the field, like, I don't know, the forward pass. It could be things off the field around the sport. Start to discuss that and sort of see how things are changing. But college football is changing very, very rapidly. And so I wanted to begin just circling back to what I think is probably one of our most well-received episodes, because without a knowledge that the college football playoff stakeholders were going to come out on Thursday and essentially say, hey, yep, this whole 12-team thing, we're going through with it. You know, who needs an emergency podcast when you have like 59 minutes of audio gold already in the can, already in the feed for all of the listeners, where I think we did a pretty good job of getting out our different stances, of being able to show the different pieces of this conversation. So with some time to, like, we're starting to hear coaches discuss, you know, their reactions to it, you know, all the winners and losers, and there's all the different ways to attack the actual announcement, and, you know, still some time that is yet to be had before we get the final details. But have any opinions changed, or what has really stood out to you as we start to think about the future of this 12-team college football playoff?
Can I just chime in here? Because this is perfectly appropriate for the conversation. Literally, like, we had already just signed on to, like, say what's up to our Zoom here that we record on. And a buddy of mine texts me. Didn't know, like, I didn't even know he listened to Cover 3. And here's the text, which I could not agree with more.
Oh, no.
Tom Fornelli made zero sense in y'all's playoff podcast. You were spot on with basically everything. And I could not agree with my guy Josh any more than that text that he just sent. So shout out to my guy Josh with the reinforcement, because I feel like Fornelli, and I don't know if Barrett Salee is as much on it. He prefers the four, but I feel like you two are the only, like, holdovers who are just, like, firm in the, like, you guys have laid it down. You are not budging, and you are never going to like the expansion.
If you want two NFLs, but one's not as good as the other, then you're going to love playoff expansion, because that's what they're turning college football into. They're turning it into another NFL, but without the same quality of football. And the stuff that makes college football great has never been the playoff. For some reason, college football went just fine for 125 years before the BCS ever came around. And it's been going fine without a 12-team playoff. People just demand stuff that they want because they want new things. And again, this is just change. It's not progress. Doesn't fix anything. It's going to create more problems more than not, in all likelihood. And it's going to improve some things, but it's going to create many different problems. And we're not going to be happy with it in 7 years. And we're going to want to change that one too. And blah, blah, blah. And so on and so on. So I don't hate, like I've talked about, I don't hate having a 12-team playoff. I'm going to be watching these games. It's just, it's not really going to change anything. It's going to be the same teams winning it every single time. And the idea that, well, now teams are going to have hope. Yeah, that's going to be fun for them for a few years until that hope turns into, well, all right, cool, let's go get our ass kicked by Alabama. That's going to get tired really quickly. and teams aren't going to be all that thrilled about it. So great. Enjoy it.
Well, I don't know. We already did this podcast. We don't want to rehash all of it.
I appreciate like that. Tom is like my mentions come to life. If my mentions went to college, like they actually made, like they made a cogent argument. I don't necessarily agree with the argument, but it's not just nonsensical batshit craziness coming out of his mouth. Like, I do think the idea that people are going to get tired of losing to Alabama. Is Oklahoma tired of making the playoff? No, they make the playoff all the time and then they get absolutely drug. And that's okay. You know, like I think people are going to be, if you followed your team all year and it's got a shot to make the playoff, your rationality is out the door, man. You are believing in that team. We see this all the time. Like, we got a shot. I'm like, what? Like, just because you guys got here doesn't mean you have a shot. But good luck telling them that. I think the passion and the support for that team in that given year will be there. I honestly, like, I'd be okay with going back to two. I just think four was the wrong number.
I mean, they're antsy. Like, it's, have you ever rearranged the furniture in a room just to mix it up? I kind of think that it's like that collective anxiety and antsy feeling among the power brokers where you're like, I don't like this. Let's do this. Move this couch over here and do this, and then we'll be good. And you're right. I mean, that change in progress debate is something that we will only know with time. We're only going to know once we actually like get it out and start the new format. But the feeling with how quickly all of this has moved. Because at first it was like, you're never going to see expansion before the end of the contract in 2025. And now all of a sudden, not only is this moving quickly, but it could be in 2023. It definitely feels like an anxiety or an antsiness to just rearrange the furniture just to and see what happens.
I do think I know how they're going to screw the G5 teams. Like, we've seen these models that show they're going to get two G5 teams in the playoff.
No way.
No chance. Like, the back testing is not going to match up. And
can you explain that real quick?
Coastal Carolina would have magically been ranked 13th last year.
Right.
It would never have been in the top 12.
Okay. Right. So I agree they'll rig it, but I think I figured out how they're going to rig it.
Okay.
And if you look at these future schedules, a lot of these teams have been loading up on really difficult games. We are going to have more, you know, two-loss SEC championship type records coming out, especially in the latter half of this decade. I think they're going to... This actually could be a positive if the committee starts to use smart metrics a little more rather than nonsense like yards per game and stuff that doesn't control for, you know, opponent quality or context. If they lean into some of the opponent adjusted numbers a little more and start to really focus on strength of record, strength of schedule, things like that, that will pretty much just vaporize the chance of a second G5 team getting in unless they go and do like what I've always told Boise they should do. Which is do what Florida State did in the late 70s, early 80s, where they played like four top 10 teams in back-to-back weeks in 1980 or 81. Danny, remember when they played like Pitt and Marino and then Georgia and then somebody else and somebody else? You know, if somebody does a barnstorming tour like that and comes out 11-1, 12-0, okay. But I think that's the way they'll do it. And I think that's fine, to be honest. We're going to have more good games scheduled if the committee will demonstrate that we're not going to rank just on record like they do now, but that they'll rank a little more based on strength of schedule. If they continue to rank based on record, then, I hate it.
They won't. I just think they'll manipulate the rating. I think they'll manipulate the rankings, and they can. And that's, again, assuming, which I'm assuming there will be another selection committee, they can have criteria, which is just, I don't want to say confusing, but just flexible enough to where they can justify one group of five. But I still think one group of five is better than zero, where they don't have any chance. Now they actually can. And Jamie Chadwell talked about this. I saw he did an interview, I think it was with ESPN, and he said, now when I look at recruits, I can actually tell them we could win a national championship. I know we could all roll our eyes and say, what are the chances you guys beat Bama? But I do think it's meaningful that he can actually tell his players, yeah, we can make the playoff and we can play on a national stage and we can be a part of those promos that are made. And we're actually a part of those, not just in word.
Danny, what was your friend's name?
Josh. My boy Josh?
Yeah, Josh. All right, here, this is for you and Josh. So you don't like the selection committee because you're pretty sure they're going to rig things, right? So now you want to give the selection committee more teams to choose, more to rig. So we're taking these things that we don't like, and our solution to fixing it is to add more of it.
No, yeah, but there was
a great idea.
No, but here's the, and to put the analogy to the furniture where it's going to be and moving the furniture around, like what we've had is essentially we've had this futon right in the doorway that everybody trips over when they come in, and then everybody's crowded and everybody's in a bad mood because you started off on the wrong foot.
And now, like, we're going to put a queen size bed there instead.
No, we're not. So now we've moved it off to the side. Now it's more welcoming. We're going to have more people in there. And yes, I agree with you. People will still complain about it, but there were some things that really were hard to swallow. Just sending a Power Five conference champion, a deserving. Now I get, and see, this is where I think it gets good, because just because you win the Pac-12, and this was something real hard that I had a hard time with, when you went, all right, if we went five automatic Power Five conference champs, what was the biggest pushback? Oh, well, what if there's an 8-4 Pac-12 champ or an 8-4 ACC champ? This protects against that, so that you don't just get rewarded, as Barrett Salee likes to say, oh, you know, mediocrity, and we want to have excellence in there. We protect against that by having an open criteria where it'll be the six highest power, or not power five,
just
six
any conference
champions. So you could potentially, if the Pac-12 is garbage or the ACC is garbage and they don't have a worthy one, then you could go to the American, you could go to wherever where the more worthy champion would be.
Hell yeah. We won't have any 8-4 conference champs, but we will have some 9-3 teams that finish third in their division. We are not rewarding mediocrity anymore. Woo!
Did you see Kirby Smart's quote on this, by the way?
Yeah, I was confused. What'd you think about it?
So he said...
he went to the strength of schedule part of it.
Yeah, this is on the Ryan McGee show. Marty McGee, there we go. I think a lot of this is going to boil down to strength of schedule, Smart told Marty McGee. For a long time now, we've been trying to build up our future strength of schedule, because it's not the losses that are going to kill you. It's not playing the best teams that will. We tried to go out and schedule major P5s across our scheduling system all the way out, with the hopes that this would really give us the opportunity to go play some really good teams. And losses won't kill you when you start talking about top 12. You've got to have a powerful schedule and play good teams. If they're for ranking you on wins as opposed to, you know, overly penalizing you for losses, I'm into that. That creates the incentive to schedule more good games in the regular season.
My fear is that we're going to see kind of the opposite. Like, maybe that's what you say now, but I think that I worry that over time, after this starts, the effect will be teams not as willing to schedule big opponents like in non-conference games.
Because same time.
They're like, if it's down between us and an 8-4 team with a win over a top 10 team, but we're only 9-3, we're probably going to get selected more often. And I think that's going to be the case. So I do think that another long-term effect of this is, yeah, we'll get great games at the end of the year, quote unquote, great games. But I feel like September is going to be nothing but Power Fives versus FCS and G5s.
Chip, the other thing you asked, like starting this conversation, would have you change, like, since we've learned more details, have you changed in your opinion? I will say, I don't know if I've changed my opinion, because forever I've been Notre Dame, you know, sack up and join the ACC. Like, the response that I had is Notre Dame is totally okay with this. Jack Swarbrick is one of the four that were presented this. He signed off on this, and this actually is the best of both worlds for them. I was under the assumption, ooh, if they can't get that four, that coveted four, buys, the first round buys, then maybe they would want to join so they get one of those. And I think their mindset was, who cares? We don't have to play a championship, an ACC championship game. We're still Notre Dame. Like, we'll sacrifice playing in this ACC championship game, and in its replacement, we'll get a home game for the first round of the playoff. Like, go ahead, do whatever you want. So I think, I thought Notre Dame was potentially a loser. Mm-hmm. I think they might be a potential winner in this situation, as well as if you want to throw in BYU, Liberty, any other independents that could be in a situation where they're like, who cares about a bye? We just want access. Now we get it, and we don't have to join a conference.
Yeah, can we at least all four of us agree that it is incredibly stupid and nonsensical that the four teams that get a bye don't get a home game?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely.
But you know why it is?
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's the same reason we only had four in the original playoff. We got to keep the bowls happy. It's just it's ridiculous on its notion that, like, a team that earns a bye is then rewarded with a game in Dallas, whereas the team that squeaks in, you know, as like an at-large, gets to play at home against a 12 seed.
Do you think? I hope that one's still. Like, I was trying to, you know, talking to, and you guys might know this as well, like, just talking to different people that potentially are in the know, like, How is this in Sharpie or is this in pencil? My hope is that this is still in pencil and they could tweak possibly that scenario, but also knowing the power of the Bulls. But like, I think it would be better if you had the first, I love them all on campus until the Final Four, but I just don't think we're going to get that. I wish it was open to conversation and maybe it will be, but ultimately those Bulls hold way too much power.
It's also the path of least resistance from a logistics standpoint, because for four quarterfinals and two semifinals, that's six games. And how many New Year's bowl games do we have? Six. Can we just keep, we could keep the semifinal rotation as is, except instead of New Year's six bowls, those end up being your quarterfinals. Like logistically, I was like, oh yeah, they're just going to do this. Like we've already got our hotels picked out. We've already got the relationships with the local sports consortiums in all of our different cities. We've already got all the restaurants. We've already got everything like set up. Don't shake that up. So yeah, keeping the Bulls happy makes me think that while it might be in pencil, I do think that, I don't think it's as dumb. I don't agree, Tom. I don't think it's as dumb because it's one less game. And one less game is healthier, you know, it is one less chance to lose. Even if it's losing an on-campus game, I do think there is an advantage to not having to play and to being that much closer to the final.
Another aspect of this that I haven't really seen anyone talk about, and maybe this is getting too far in the weeds. Does this new format mean we're going to have less bowl games?
Yes.
Because, okay.
Well, automatically, yes, because... Right?
There's less participants, or you would have to go down really. So, or no, you have crappier bowl games.
I just mean in the sense that why do so many bowl games exist? Money. Who owns all these bowl games?
ESPN.
Many of them.
ESPN has them to fill time during December, like, you know, weekends, because there's no NFL. There's the college is obviously off. So if we're adding these rounds to the playoffs where that's an extra weekend of important games, because obviously they have to spread them out. Does ESPN just kind of poop can a couple of the games that they currently have? So that way we're going to have fewer bowl games overall, because they're going to say, well, you know what? Instead of having four, you know, of these games between G5 teams this Saturday, we'll just have our playoff game so we can just get rid of these bowls.
Potentially, if the Rose Bowl plays nice, right? I mean, like, hasn't that always been the thorn in the side of the
Well, the Rose Bowl. But don't you think... The Rose Bowl's not going away, but I think the bowls that are going away.
It's not
going
to be what it wants.
Right. No, it's not going to be what it wants. But when I think of bowls going away, I don't think of any of the. Yes.
I mean, like the.
Why do these bowls exist?
Potato Bowl's dead.
Like,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That won't be the first one. Like, newer bowls that just started up will be on the chopping block. Bowls that, like.
Boca Raton, which I like and love seeing where it is and played there. That one, I think, would be a prime example of one that could be in jeopardy. And I'm pretty sure ESPN owns it, you know, because there are a couple bowls that are run by independent, you know, committees or whatever.
Sun Bowl ain't going anywhere.
Do we still own the Sun Bowl?
Yes.
Nice.
Wait, I think the Sun, I think CBS just has the rights to it.
Well, we don't own it.
Yeah,
we don't own it.
Because ESPN has that whole like actual event management wing that does straight up own the bowl that where they get to negotiate all of it. Yeah.
But these bowls exist primarily so that it's for inventory slotting over the holiday season when a lot of people actually are at home, you know, out of work or working part time, you know, sort of doing that, you know, December hours type deal. They're traveling. They're at the in-laws. They got family around. They want to watch stuff and they're in the living room. That's basically why a lot of these exist. And if ESPN wants to you know, put those slots to the best and highest use, it easily could move a playoff game or two, you know, to there. I don't think they're married to certain dates. I just, they have to work, at least as of now, around when the Rose Bowl wants to have its parade and that it's that the halftime or whatever third quarter is timed up with the sunset.
In the same way that it's like, I think Bud, you first introduced the, like, you know, it choosing a champion. I think this is worse, but if you're talking about me, the person who has to have content, this is good for me. College football used to abandon about half of December. We'd have our conference championship Saturday. We'd have our selection show. And you know what? I kind of liked it. All right. I would go out of town. I would go on a trip. I would take like an extra Friday or a Monday. And before the Bulls really got cranked up, just have a little me time. That ain't happening. Somebody pointed out this is college football taking back the month of December and being like, no, we are going to be relevant all the way through the month. And it's going to be after our selection show, we've got these first round games to point to. Then we've got to hold those first round games, and then it's going to set up the quarterfinals. Then it's going to set up the semifinals. So these other bowl games, some will get put on the chopping block, some will still exist, but they will only exist to promote the first round and the quarterfinal games that are going to be coming up.
Welcome to my world here, because I was the only recruiting guy for SB Nation. So I really never got December off even before early signing period. I would go Alabama, Mississippi All-Star game, and then the Florida game, and then would hit the Under Armour game, which was like the 26th to the 30th, and then had to fly to San Antonio, for, because I basically didn't want to invest in anybody else. I was like the only dude there, which worked out well career wise. now we have early signing period too. Like now college football is all December. You guys ain't getting a break now.
This is it.
Christmas
in January.
Yeah.
As diehard college football fans, would you rather, because we were saying ESPN is in it for the money. ESPN is in, it's pretty well documented some of the issues they've had financially. It's going to be hard for them. Would you rather, see the Boca Bowl, Cure Bowl, Bahamas Bowl continue, but have teams that are 5-7 squaring off against each other, or see those go away? Because I've always been we don't need so many bowl games, and I've said, let's just do away with them. But then if they're gone...
Yeah, I've never needed that many bowl games, but I've enjoyed that many bowl games. I will watch those little ass bowl games between 2-6 and 6 teams because whatever. I'm just trying to get it in while we can. But
you're wagering on them.
So. Look, the more times I can sit down for West Virginia Syracuse and realize that Will Grier ain't playing, and I can max bet that live bet button every which way possible, regular line, alternate line, team total under. The more, give it to me. All the time.
I can't sit here and see I will miss them, but
I don't want sub 500 Power 5 teams, especially ones that just fired their coach. When we said anything goes in 2020 and 2-8 South Carolina got invited to a bowl game, I don't want that. Now, the other argument is that a 4-7 Mississippi State team was very, very eventful when they showed up for their bowl game. So there can still be entertainment. But in general, if you're asking the question about some of these other bowl games and 5-7 teams, I don't want sub 500 Power 5 teams that have had a lot of losing also then ask them to be showing up for a bowl game.
What if they just got rid of bowls in general and they only had the playoff?
Don't like that.
Coca Clipsis, this is Tom Fornelli laying the seeds for a 64 teamer.
I haven't heard. Danny, do you think that bowl trips are fun for players? Because I've not heard players complain about going to bowl games.
No, they're awesome. They're like an extended vacation. The only thing that I'll say is that in the playoff era, they're not so much fun anymore. Then they're more like work trips, business trips. Because now I think some teams might hold true to that, but you don't travel as long. I mean, normally if you before playoffs, you'd go for 5 or 6 nights, first couple days, you're sightseeing, going to SeaWorld, going to the zoo, going to the children's hospital, taking in sights. They have like parties, welcome committee. Those still happen at some of the lower tier bowls, but now in the playoff field, coaches aren't going to be as open to, sure, let's let them run around in the sun all day or go to the beach to do, fun activities out there. They're going to be worried about, is he going to have, exhaustion or dehydration?
Yeah, in the playoff, you're not doing the wing eating challenge where both offensive linemen are going all head to head against each other.
Here's a question for coaches who listen to the show. DMs are open. Let us know. You know how to get in contact with us. If given the choice, with bowl games, if your team misses the playoff, you don't get a bowl game, but the NCAA still allows you to have those practices that you get. So another, 15 practices? How many practices is it?
15, right?
Mm-hmm. So 15. So you get 15 practices, but there's no game. Do you take that deal or do you want the game? Let us know.
What's your hunch? What do you say?
Yeah.
I think they take
my hunch
the game
is too. Most are going to want the game, but yeah. I wonder how many might be like, yeah, I'll take the like a late winter practice before spring practice to get ready for next season instead of an opponent. You know what I mean?
I think this is so situational because there will be coaches who like coming off a 500 year and they're like, don't make me subject to sub 500, 6-7. And they know the squad they've got, maybe a couple guys opting out. They'd be like, nope. So I think it would be very much situational on a year to year basis what those coaches would want to do.
That's the thought. Like, I think a lot of coaches would rather get an extra 15 practices before the spring to prepare for next season.
Right. Yeah, do the seniors have to practice would be the next question.
Do you think that the kids would want to stay around and do that? Like, that's my thing, is that the bowl game is part of the hook for getting them to practice more. A lot of these kids, if you're having a really poor year, I can pretty much guarantee they'd rather go home and see their friends back home.
Like, so do I.
You know, if you didn't have the bowl game as the reason for sticking around, I think a lot of them are going to say, yeah, peace. I'm going to go home and hang out, see my guys from back home.
I'm just interested in what the coaches think.
Yeah. Interesting. Danny, you are coming to us live from Tallahassee. The group chat exploded with you in the iconic Sidewinder. I mean, just
slingshot. I think it's a slingshot, right? Come on, get the name right, dang it.
Hey, listen, if Polaris wants to come and sponsor the podcast, then maybe I'll get a better handle on what their 2021 lineup is. What's the vibe like around the football facility, around the football program?
So yesterday I got in, drove up yesterday from South Florida, and I have a whole new appreciation for how many times my parents drove up like on a short weekend to drive and watch me play. And even though I drove it just as many times, like it was back and forth for school, you're going to be here for a semester. Like, I'm only here for a few nights. It's a long drive. So shout out to them. New appreciation for that. So yesterday I just got in. My daughter's doing golf camp over at the golf facility. And so she got rained out early. So I was planning on going over to the football facility maybe tomorrow, Wednesday, kind of going over. I was going to pull her out of camp, give her a tour, and like try to make it more official. But she got out. There was some storms in the area. So she got out at 7 as opposed to 8:30. There was still light. So I was like, hey, why don't we go over? I'll show you the football stadium. So we go over there and I'm like, hey, let's get a picture in front of Coach Bowden's statue, which is right in front of the athletic center. So I get out of the car and I'm getting ready to take a picture. And all of a sudden I see a couple of the coaches and they're like, and it was dead. Like, no one was there. And they were like right inside kind of hanging out. And they said, Danny, what's going on? I'm like, oh, hey, how's it going? They're like, do you want to come inside? I'm like, sure. So like impromptu, unscheduled tour of the facility for my daughter, got some pictures. Coach Norvell was already gone for the day, but there were a bunch of assistants around. And they were kind of, I think they were recapping like what has been a crazy, and not only recapping, but they're in the middle of all these camps that are going on. So like the first thing they were like, man, we're exhausted. Like, it's Sunday night. They just wanted to go home. And they had all these campers here over that. There were like 4,000 kids have been here in the last week. But they were excited. Like, there's definitely a positive mojo around the team, around the facilities. Like, they're showing me, you know, pictures of what they're going to redo and how they're going to redo the locker room and they're going to redo the players lounge. So all of it, a ton of excitement, I would say, is kind of the key word. There's a positive energy that's around the program, which is exciting. And also hard for me to register that excitement with a Vegas win total at 5.5. Like, so I'm like, what do I do with that? Cause I'm all in with the positive mojo, but then I'm like, oh, what is Vegas? The bookmakers need to come out here and spend a day with me in the football facility. And maybe we'll bump it up. But I think they also are aware of the schedule.
Yeah. I mean, I got that same vibe also, that they're extremely tired. Like, I was texting some of those dudes because a lot of coaching staff hit you up after you go to a 2-day 7-on-7 at IMG. And they're like, how you guys doing? They're like, we are beat. Like, because they're desperate. They haven't met these kids in person many times. Danny, I think the best way to reconcile that is understand the excitement about the future. But in these camps where the players are working as counselors, look at the players that are working as counselors. You're like, oh my God. Like, would this guy start at NC State? Nope. Would he start at Louisville? Maybe. Would he start at Miami? No. Like, they don't have dudes that are right. ready to help them in many spots on this roster. Like, what's the NCAA's term, going pro and something other than sports? We're going to have a whole lot of that in Tallahassee on this current roster.
But they're starting to sign guys, right? I mean, they're starting – or not even sign them, but getting more interest from guys that maybe they haven't been in the mix for recently. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and they have the number three player in the entire country who is, like, just spent 8 days in Tallahassee and is, like, their best recruiter by far in Travis Hunter. Probably the first guy in a decade who legitimately we would rank as the number one receiver or number one corner in the country, depending on what he wants to play. So that's pretty helpful if he's like a better recruiter than any of their coaches on staff. And they have some decent ones on staff. He just, some Didn't guys
he,
are
he
just
grew
like,
up I'm, loving Florida State, right?
Yeah. He's a Palm Beach kid. He plays in Atlanta now, but yeah.
Let me ask you guys something. Cause I'm honest to a fault. The slingshot itself, is that what you guys would be rolling out there to impress 16, 17-year-old recruits?
No.
Because in my mind, it wasn't. But I'll tell you what might have changed. And I actually sent you guys the picture. Me, I got in it. And they were, you know, they're very proud of the slingshot. So I was like, all right, I'm going to get a picture in it. By the way, it's really hard to get in and out of. Like an offensive lineman, I don't know. Or the type of offensive lineman you would want blocking for you, I don't know if would be able to fit into it. But I was kind of mocking it. Now, I got it, saw it. There is a positive mojo around it. And so I asked my daughter, who is 14, so she's not that far from the age group that would be impressed by it. I was like, what did you think of that? She's like, it was cool. She's like, it's really cool. And I was like, okay. But if I was a head coach and I was, and I guess Mike Norvell bought it, like it's his, like he bought it. It wasn't like the booster supplied it. If I was a head coach, I probably would have got the new Lambo like SUV and pimp that out in garnet and gold with the colors and the suicide doors. That's just me. Like then, but then maybe you don't want to have that disparity with your money and the player's money that glaring in front of their face. So I don't know, but I'm coming around on the slingshot. Coming around.
I feel like your daughter is probably like, yeah, no, that's cool. And then dad gets in it. She's like, eh, you know what? It's kind of dorky now.
I mean, no, I got a picture with her in it. Like we did it together. She liked it. It's cool.
Isn't the slingshot more attainable? Like if you had the tricked out Lambo, aren't we? I don't know the prices of these items, but I'm assuming that the slingshot is a little bit more reasonable on the price tag, right?
Yeah, but we're talking about somebody who's making. He can afford either, right?
Sure. Sure.
One? Yeah. Is that a write off? By the way.
He's
using
question.
It to recruit.
Yeah, so and then you the, definitely go for the Lambo. Yeah.
And remember, like, so these football camps they're running are actually run through his LLC, right? Yeah. Like, I don't know if people realize this, but all these camps happen over the summer. They're not run through the schools. They're run, like, you have to cut the school in some ways, and you have to figure out the insurance stuff. But like, they're usually run through a coach's company.
And so then, are the assistants who help they're paid out through the LLC?
Yeah.
Assuming. And then all other, I love all these questions I'm learning. Like Mackenzie Milton's out there helping, Jordan Travis out there helping. Can they get paid?
They do.
And they can even, before pre-NIL, they can get paid, right?
They can get paid, right.
So they're paid out of Mike Norvell's LLC.
I believe so, yeah.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
But I don't think anybody, oh, it's awesome. I love it. It's outstanding. But I think not a lot of fans understand that dynamic that could take place.
When you see a slingshot out in the streets, are you envious? Because like, that's what, when you said, if you would you like the slingshot, I thought about being at like a mall or, you know, like an outdoor shopping center or something, and you're sitting and you're eating outside, and then the slingshot comes cruising by. Like, do you turn your head and say, man, that's awesome? Or do you turn your head and be like, dork?
I'll let anyone else answer that. I'm skewed by where I live. I live in one of the most, and not me, but I live in one of the wealthiest counties, maybe in Palm Beach County. Like it's, you know, it's uber rich that live down there. So they would look down on a slingshot, but I don't think that's necessarily the case for everybody. That's where I skewed towards the Lambo that's there.
I don't think coaches drive like the nicest possible stuff, by the way. Like,
but
Jimbo,
doesn't Saban, didn't he have like the highest S class?
Yeah, but
Mercedes,
doesn't he
like
have
he owned the dealership?
Yeah.
Didn't someone have the swag copter? But that was more.
That was something.
That was a thing. Remember at A&M, he had the swag copter that would come into practice. Like, I think that's got some status to it.
They took that to high schools to get around like the Houston area more efficiently on Friday nights, so it could hit more high schools. It was actually
that slingshot's pretty fast though.
It is.
get around.
Like, Willie had an SUV. Jimbo had a black truck that had like the mossy oak camo stripe down the side of it. I know he had a car too, but anyway, slingshot is different.
It depends on what region of the country you're recruiting and what kind of car you want to drive if you're a coach.
I guess fair.
Oh, colder area? Like, you're not going to be driving some open air thing if you're recruiting in some parts of the country.
No, I feel like culturally, like if you're on the West Coast, maybe
USC,
Beamers.
There's the lamp. Yeah.
Beamers USC, are more.
UCLA. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I got you.
Agreed. What car that could be our, if we do a podcast question from our official account, like which car defines each university best? Like what should their coach be driving their recruits? And maybe a slingshot's appropriate for Florida State. Maybe it's perfect.
How many tweets will we have before somebody replies with Charger for Alabama?
A lot. It will not take many. It'll be one of the first suggestions. Yeah.
What's the first one that comes to mind for y'all as the answer to that question? The school and the car.
I'm not saying.
I've got Virginia Tech and a Bronco.
You know? I like it.
I was going to say USC and a white Ford Bronco.
SMU and a Mustang, literally. Yeah,
something that you load up for the like the hunting or fishing trip.
I was thinking for the Hurricanes because I see these all the time when I go down to Miami, like the old school hoopty, like with the not like 30-inch rims, like that's purple, except this one would be orange and green, the spinners on the side, neon lights, and maybe even bounces while it's going down the road. But that feels more West Coast, though, so maybe not the bounce. Maybe that would be the West Coast one.
Bud, what do you think?
That's a pretty good answer. I did see an incredible one of those yesterday in Bradenton. I mean, it was...
It had to
be like 40, so this thing's going to roll over when it turns. It was... They were like candy blue... Probably the biggest rims I've ever seen. It was pretty impressive.
I mean, couldn't you just see Paul Crist like on the biggest,
snowmobile?
Yes, biggest souped out like snowmobile that's out there that fits like four. It fits your entire family, and he's out there just rolling up to recruits on it.
Yes,
I see that. No, I was gonna say Paul Crist is rolling around in a minivan, like tried to stack as many linemen as possible inside.
If you saw Paul Crist pull up to a restaurant in a minivan and the Wisconsin offensive line poured out, it would be the greatest thing that I could possibly imagine as a hostess, you know, and whoever is waiting on the table is just like jackpot. Yeah. Here
meanwhile,
we go.
The chef, meanwhile, the chef's like, oh God.
Yeah. You just go ahead and dump out everything that's like pre-made and start making backups.
Yep. Speaking of being in Tallahassee, I was driving my daughter around yesterday and I was like, there's the Olive Garden we used to go to. I used to take the offensive lineman there and we would get all you could eat breadsticks, pasta, and we used to destroy them. Like, I don't think they minded because we were there, but we used to we definitely got our money's worth on that.
How long would y'all stay? Because there's like the amount of food they can eat, but how fast would it happen when you're at one of those? Like, yeah.
Yeah, you'd be in and out in 45 minutes, no problem.
Oh, man, we would go to Sonny's in high school. They had all-you-can-eat pork for like $7.99 after practice. And it was like me and Stavich and Ricky Epps. And like there's no way they made money on us. No. Like, you just got the reorder in already.
Like hey, let's go ahead and, let's go ahead and run this back.
Send that ticket immediately. Yeah. Right.
Coming up on the other side, we've got a quarterback on the move in the Pac-12, and we want to try to identify some of the developments that helped shape this college football sport as we know it today. Next.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Little bit of transfer news from over the weekend. Sam Noyer, the starting quarterback from Colorado, announced that he will be transferring to Oregon State. He's from Beaverton. He's from somewhere in Oregon. So this is a little bit of a return home is the way that he announced it on Twitter. So the thing that makes this interesting to me, we talk about Oregon State almost as much as we talk about Kansas on here. Oregon State also had an excellent around the clock episode that Bud got a good look at to talking about the Beavers. It's interesting because between Tristan Chebbia and Chance Nolan, I thought that we already had our conversation and our players in the part for that quarterback job. I guess Bud, I'll throw this to you first since you've been keeping tabs on Oregon State, definitely the most recently of this group. With Sam Noyer's arrival, how does that change? He's immediately eligible. He's got 1 year of eligibility left. What does that make you feel about the quarterback situation, what Jonathan Smith has, and maybe even the fact that he wanted to go get a player like Sam Noyer, what that might say about both Chebbia and Nolan?
Yeah, I mean, if they're really counting on him to play quarterback for them, it makes me more concerned about Oregon State because he really wasn't very good, I didn't think. But he also is a guy who was a safety, right? Like maybe he could go back to playing safety for Oregon State. I'm not trying to be flippant about this.
Right.
Maybe they really see an undervalued skill. That's something I'm very interested with the transfer portal is maybe a school sees an ability you have or a skill. And you know, much like free agency and other sports, they want to bring you in and, you know, like baseball with spin rate. Hey, I love how his curveball. They didn't have him throw the curveball as much, you know, at the prior team. Let me use it more here. Maybe there's something there, but I'm not trying to rag on a kid, but I just not really doesn't move the needle here.
Yeah, this is to me. I think this is more interesting for Colorado's QB battle. Okay. Like if he's leaving, you know, JT Shrout transferred in from Tennessee. Maybe he's had a pretty good camp. Maybe he's kind of, you know, taking some control of that job, or maybe, you know, it's true freshman Drew Carter. So I think this says more about Colorado than it does Oregon State, because I'm with Bud. I don't know if Noyer's going to be going into Corvallis and taking that job from somebody, because he was all second team Pac-12 last year. But we got to remember
Jarek Broussard was like that offense, right?
Yeah. And we just have to remember what the Pac-12 season was. Like it wasn't a very something we could probably take a whole lot and extrapolate from as far as, you know, future performance. He's also somebody that threw more interceptions than touchdowns. So I don't think he's just walking into Oregon State and taking over the starting job.
And keep in mind, Carl Durrell put that team in an excellent position. If you look at the scores that you know, grade the coaches based on, you know, what did you have like optimal, you know, run pass? And then did you, you know, how did you handle your third, fourth down decisions in opponent territory? Carl Durrell was like number one, which is really, you know, that's a way you can maybe steal a win more than we think you should probably have. And if you look at Colorado's underlying stats, that looks to be the case. They really were not that good of a team on a down-to-down basis, but they found ways on the margins to win some games. They probably made Noyer look a little better than he actually was.
How do you track that decision-making stat that you just referenced right there?
So Garrett McClintock of BYU 24/7 actually puts it out every year. So I'll find the link and maybe we'll drop it in the show notes.
That is very cool. I need to add it to my arsenal of tools. But so keep your eyes on that. Sam Noyer from Colorado to Oregon State. Okay, the biggest developments for college football. I liked that we kept this a little bit broad. I've got I've got a list here, and I wanted to. Do you mind? I mean, do you mind if I just jump out here?
Yeah, I
think that the most impactful development for the sport of college football is cable television. And while there's lots of different ways that you can trace it, the two that I want to focus on are both exposure and revenue. Because cable television, on one hand, allowed the entire country to see the entire country. You know, and if you are running a college football program, you're now going to be able to recruit in more places. You're now going to be able to get exposure for your program, which has nothing but positive benefits, as long as you're winning. Then the revenue portion of it is what's so crazy, because we get total chicken and egg scenario where the revenue is coming because you're getting more exposure. And in doing your media rights deals, you have created the revenue that funds not just college football, but all of college athletics. Like, those media rights checks being the backbone of college athletics, while also being the reasons that schools are going to be able to recruit all over the country and have that kind of exposure. The national college football product that we have today, I think the most impactful development was cable television.
You're correct.
Is that it? I mean, like the forward pass, air conditioning.
I think this is probably along the same lines as yours too, but I think the internet changed a lot too, especially as far as recruiting, because, you know, like we talked about, Bud, like going to the camps this weekend, it's the first time these coaches have had a chance to see any of these players in person. So we just went through over a year where they weren't able to see players in person, but they were able to at least get a decent idea of some of the kids through video on the internet. And I think that that's one of those things that, as far as the recruiting angle, especially, like before the internet came around, college football fans cared about recruiting to a certain degree. Like they followed it. Like, there were magazines dedicated to it. Guys like Tom Lemming made a living doing it. But like, once the internet came around, I think that recruiting and coverage of recruiting really blew up. And I think that that has changed the game a lot, in that, like, you know, like, Bud, you released the blue chip ratio today. Coaches pay attention to that stuff. We've talked about, like, Urban Meyer's talked about how he checks the players' rankings of guys recruiting to see how his team is stacking up. I think that it has impacted the way that teams recruit, the way they approach recruiting, and how they're able to recruit players from outside their own area. So I think the internet in that kind of way has had a huge impact as well.
I guess I'll piggyback that, because that's exactly where I was going. I think specifically within that is digital film and the quality and the, you know, the relative efficiency, cheap price. Yeah. Of quality cameras. I had to go to a Buffalo Wild Wings on Saturday night to use their internet, because my hotel didn't have internet and I had 40 videos to upload from the 7-on-7. And I think if I brought my 2-year-old to watch a UFC fight at like 12:30 at night, my wife would totally beat my ass. yes. But it is cool to do in some circles, I guess, cause there's a whole lot of that going on. But, so where's it going? Oh, anyway, I put out a Twitter question, because I was waiting for some stuff to upload. Like, who is the highlight from like the late 80s or the early 90s high school highlights that you really wish you could see that you've never seen? And, you know, mine was Albert Haynesworth, because apparently he had 150 tackles as a senior and 51 quarterback pressures, but only 6 sacks. I'm like, what are the quarterback just like slinging the ball away immediately? Like, how do you have 51 pressures and like 60 tackles for loss, but only 6 sacks?
Oh, so no, it's Albert.
Like, yeah, right. Exactly. That, and I really wanted to see Derek Thomas too, because he was a beast at Alabama from day one. But the quality of the film on some of these players from the 90s is so bad that I do think it probably led to more guys falling through the cracks. And now you have a much better, you're able to see the players in a higher quality. You're able to actually see who the linemen are, which is helpful, as opposed to the super graininess that you had at the high school level for a long time. And even some of the early 2000s film is poor. The other thing is, you used to have to go high school to high school and collect all these VHS tapes or reels if you want to go back even further. Now it's all digital. It's all in a database. I can have multiple members of my coaching staff watch it from their house, on the road, whatever. I can pull up the notes associated with all these clips and see, you know, do we have them as a green light, which means we're given max communication to them, yellow light, which means keep them warm. We may have to take them at some point, you know, but like, we're not ready to accept equipment right now, or red light, which is like, this kid's not in our plans ever. that has really changed the game. I think it has made for far fewer sleepers who totally fall through the cracks. Like now, if you have good film, we're actually able to see what you did on it. So the digital film, both quality and availability, is kind of my main one there.
All right. I think you guys, I'm going to do like a...
We take the good ones?
No. You guys definitely took the good ones, but I'll be like the guy in the first take meetings who like, all right, I'll take the other side. Been in those meetings before. Like, all right, I'll take this one.
Wait, you played a character at ESPN?
We're going to embrace debate. Let's go. So over the last, like, you know, doing all this talking that we do about the sport, mentioned a bunch, like I feel like we're on this massive precipice of change. And while I don't think we knew it when cable TV started, it was like a slow process. All of a sudden, I think we're on the cusp of this really dramatic change. And the transfer is big, but I think when we look back, it'll be, you know, it's impactful. The expansion of the playoff, another huge change, which I think is impactful. But I the name, image, and likeness, I think is a massive, massive change for the sport. Even just a little thing, like Bud was saying just 5 minutes ago, talking about an Oregon State transfer. I hate to rip on him because he's just a kid. I think that aspect might change in some people's mind because, oh, he gets paid. He's getting paid a lot of money. Let's treat him like that. So I think that aspect will change. Coaching the kids will change. I do think in maybe 10 years, definitely 20, and maybe as soon as 2 years, we'll look back and be like, can you believe we suspended Johnny Manziel for a half because he took 30 grand or 3 grand from somebody to sign autographs? Like, I also, here's the thing I worry about as well with this change, because this is what we do in politics and life and everything, is we have this pendulum that swings back and forth, and very rarely are we right in the middle. And clearly we're seeing a massive shift one way in everything. Even though the name, image, and likeness is bipartisan, there is a movement to have the players be actually paid, not name, image, and likeness, which go ahead and make money, and not, it won't be for everybody. We're already seeing, and there was some testimony before Congress last week of, what about unionization? What about, you know, about a piece of the pie? What about some of the revenues from the TV deals? And I just feel like that this name, image, and likeness will lead to that. And Bud made a comment a couple episodes ago about worried about the future of the sport, right? Like, do we even have this in 20, 25 years? And I think, like, this could be the start of something that looks dramatically different. It's not the name, image, and likeness, but it opens the door to a different set of mind thinking. Once you see guys posting pictures and actually, you know, with money and nice things, and for whatever reason that bothers people, it shouldn't bother you, but they'll start looking at them as professionals. And the more we do that, the further we get away from what we've always known college football to be, which was an amateur sport of players loving it, you know, loving the sport and just want to play for that.
So like I said about expanding the playoff, you're turning it into a mini NFL.
You are, but you're not. This is a step in the direction.
Matters soon.
What about on field? What some of the developments do you think, because I didn't think that we made any bad changes when we put in targeting rules. I mean, we still like have hand wringing about some of the specifics and the way it's legislated, but haven't we pretty much adapted and adjusted? And while there have been a lot of offensive friendly rules, especially when it comes to pass interference, is there anything recently that feels like we've seen a big change in the way that the game looks? Because forward pass is forward pass the biggest on-field development in terms of the way the game is played?
It's been around too long. I do think RPOs and the way the linemen downfield, I think that's a massive change.
Yeah, the clock rules were a pretty big change.
Tempo.
In the middle part of the decade.
Yeah. No huddle, like going fast.
Because that's the thing. Like a lot of, like the RPOs, they're new, but they're just different takes on the same things that have always, you know, it's a triple option offense, except instead of three different running options, you've got a passing option now too. So it's, I don't know. Like, I think you're right, but the clock stuff has changed a lot. But I don't know, like, what rules have really changed the game dramatically.
I got one. Overtime. Like as somebody who was impacted by a tie that we didn't get to go to overtime, I think it's much better. You know, I think it's much better now that we actually do have a determiner. You know, we have a winner and we have a loser.
And why not just, if you're going to do the 2-point shootout thing, like that they're implementing, just go straight to it.
Like, why don't even time? Mess around with, because we do two overtimes of starting at the 25, and then in the third we go to the 2-point shootout, or is it after that?
I think it's the second one. And it's like, if the reason you're making these changes is so there's fewer plays and the players aren't, you know, there's fewer injury risk, then just go straight to it. I mean, that's what it's going to be most of the time anyway. It's
the 2-point shootout's penalty kicks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They should start at the 40, in my opinion. That would be so much better if you did, because that way, like, a field goal is not assumed. You give a little more time to play defense. If you're an offense that is a little more wide open, it actually caters to you, as opposed to right now, like, you want to take the bigger team pretty much because everything is going to be in that compressed red zone area. I wish they would do that. Kind of like in baseball, I wish they would not have the runner on second. I put a runner on first if you have to put a runner somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, at least that you have to execute some correct strategy. With the runner on second, it's like you can have two really, really poorly hit balls and you win the game if the other team just screws up even worse than you do.
The two options I like are, like, either starting at the 40 or do it where, like, you move the ball back 5 yards with each overtime, or just do the blind auction.
What's that?
Where you ask both coaches, separate from one another, where they're willing to take the ball at, and whoever's willing to take it the furthest from the goal line gets the ball.
Has anybody discussed that?
No, yeah. I've never heard that.
Yeah, I care, but I think it's it might be Connolly who's brought it up. I'm not sure, but somebody has. I got it from somebody. I think it's brilliant. I mean, just from football perspective, I think that it adds an entirely new element to it. But I also think that just from, like, our perspective and second guessing coaches, which is every sports fan's, you know, wet dream, their favorite thing to do, gives coaches something else to get yelled at by the fans. Like, why the hell didn't you just say the 35?
And now we've got Ed Ogeron, who is 1-6 in the blind auction, you know, going up against Lane Kiffin.
He keeps bidding the opponent's 10 every time.
Lane Kiffin just wants to win the bet, so he goes as far away as possible every single time.
There are charts for this, though, right? Like, we know, based on your offensive efficiency, what the expected point total is per each spot on the field.
And that doesn't mean that they're going to follow it.
I think very quickly you would get within a pretty predictable range, and it wouldn't be like somebody says the 30 and somebody says the 50. It'd be like, okay, somebody says their own 26 and the other guy's like, I'm going to be ballsy, I'm going to say my own 24.
Mm.
Pretty much, like, I think it'd be very, very close. Or you may even have some guys bidding the exact same, and then what do we do? Like a bid
home
off?
Team.
Okay.
You mentioned the clock rules changing a few years back. Will you remind me, like, what were those adjustments that you're identifying?
So they went from, they had like two, I was actually talking to Andy Staples about this a couple weeks ago. They went from the 42nd to the 25, and then the clock that started immediately upon the ball being spotted. And it reduced the time of games. Remember this? And then they had some stuff that they went back on, because the one year we had like 6 or 7 fewer plays in the game. I'll try and find it.
And the best part of it is it reduced the time of games, which then caused the networks to add more commercial breaks.
Hey, we like those commercial breaks, Tom. We love those commercial breaks.
It's funny. See, that's an example of something that's good for us, but maybe not good for the sport. I think the playoff is good for the sport and good for us, Tom.
No, okay. We'll see.
Scholarship limits is also on my list, just because, like, the days of having 115 players and the coaches that were able to really thrive on that, and the schools and programs that were able to just continue to get better and better and better on better. Scholarship limits in terms of roster construction feels like one of the most impactful developments that has shaped the sport. And I think it shaped it in a good way, just because even though we still have those dynasties that overwhelm you with resources and other manners, it at least does create somewhat of balance in terms of the two teams that show up on Saturdays.
I think that's a really good one. By the way, since we talked about transfers, a Caleb Evans is a really nice corner get for Missouri. I know Georgia was in on him, Notre Dame was in on him, and Missouri had a good connection there, I believe, his former DB coach. That's like a high-level transfer for them and something that if you guys keep notes on teams, or I'll drop it in the spring cleaning doc, but that's a pretty big pickup.
Caleb Evans.
Caleb Evans.
Caleb Evans.
Yeah, from Tulsa.
Mm-hmm. Good player.
Okay. Good pickup for Missouri.
A little in the weeds maybe, but
Alpha Nerd's been doing some work.
Alpha Nerd.
And Alpha Nerd's got, I tell you what, he's got a receiver, Jamarion Wayne. First time I think anybody's ever seen him in person this weekend. He torched Midwest Boom for like 3 or 4 scores in the semifinal. Midwest Boom is probably like the best 7-on team in the Midwest. And even though he's from St. Louis, Jamarion Wayne was playing for Texas Elite, which is go figure. He's a good player. We might have to revisit his ranking a little bit now that we've seen him in person and realize he's like almost 6'4" and jumps out of the gym.
Is he 22? He's this 22, cycle?
22, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. I was like, what positions? We have him as an athlete. We were talking to him. He's like, well, I play QB, DB, rush passer a little bit, receiver. Like, what do you think you are? Because we have him listed as an athlete. And until we saw him in person, like, I don't know what his best position is. But now I'm like, oh, it's receiver. Yep.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. good job on the Alpha Nerd getting it done. Any other developments that stand out that you want to make sure we get out here in the discussion?
I think early signing period has changed.
Ooh, yeah. I don't even know how all the changes. Know, though, yeah.
Or it's changed the sport. It's just too early to know what those changes are going to be.
I think I know, Tom, I would push back slightly in that I think I can tell you what one of the changes with it is. I'm just not sure if we can perfectly measure like the magnitude of that change yet, but I think it has made it significantly harder for new coaches to rebuild.
Yeah,
because you used to have about 12 weeks to put together your first recruiting class, and you could actually
you've got like 12 days.
Yeah, exactly. So you're basically punting on it. We're looking at these first classes. Even the schools, honestly, that are doing well with new coaches from that time, Florida A&M being two of them. Go look at their 2018 classes. Disasters. Like the schools are doing poorly. Same thing. Those first classes these coaches sign, a lot of times these players are available for a reason, and the reason ain't a good one, right? And I think increasingly you may end up seeing guys who just got hired just go all transfer.
So
they don't make 4-year mistakes on kids.
I also have indoor practice facilities on my list. I mean, I understand. Hey, talk to some of these places that don't have indoor practice facilities and are getting rained out all the time or dealing with inclement weather.
Has it changed the game?
No. Maybe. You know what it sucks for? The players. That was the best when you get a rain out day. You'd be like, yes, yeah. We have to do a walkthrough. We can't bang on each other. We're just going to go inside and walk this out. Oh, that was the best.
You're gonna be regretting those indoor practice facilities when you have to travel north for a playoff game for once.
Oh, cannot wait. He is Tom Fornelli. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at BudElliott3. You can follow him at Danny Canale. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.